There's crispy. And then there's crispy-er. Try our new and improved Tyson Crispy Chicken Strips. Crispy just got crispy-er.
College Football Live is presented by the first ever Mazda CX-30. Feel alive. And in part by DiGiorno. It's not delivery. It's DiGiorno.
The National Championship Game, presented by AT&T, January 13th on ESPN.
That means we're 1 week away from the National Championship Game. Clemson is coming off their win over Ohio State in the Fiesta Bowl. And the team spoke today about facing LSU and preparing for the Natty.
We don't think of it as ACC against SEC. It's just, you know, every game we play, we want to win. But for sure, it's... You know, the way it is now, you beat an SEC team, and, you know, you add to your resume. So, you know, it's always, those are big games for sure.
I've been a kid from Louisiana, getting to play in the Superdome against the home state team for a national championship. You couldn't script this up any better, but, I mean, you definitely had to go out there and take care of business.
I really look forward to it just for all the competition that's across the whole field. I love playing, like, great competitors, just to see where you match up at.
It's a national championship, so I'm pretty motivated to go out there and play good regardless. I just got to go out there and be me, play my game, and just hopefully come out with a bang.
So it's Monday. They have a week.
I'm glad they're motivated to play the national championship.
Yeah, that's big.
That's good to hear. Yeah.
Well, and then they have a whole week to ramp up for. I mean, they say good things come to those who wait, and we've been waiting. This is the longest layoff in the playoff history. So, Trevor, first, let's go to Ryan. You first. How does this benefit Clemson, this layoff for them?
Well, for them, I thought it was great because of the physical nature of the national semifinal for them. T. Higgins, Justin Ross both got banged up, almost didn't come back in the game. It was a very physical game. And I think the extra time for them is going to benefit them. LSU, of course, ran away with it, and it's going to benefit them as well. But for them, they needed this time off to get healthy and be ready to go on Monday night.
I think the one thing that can hurt you is that when you have this much time, you can overanalyze things, and you can have a plan in. You can be ironclad. You can feel good about your offensive adjustments, your audibles, what you're looking for defensively if they get in this formation. And then if you spend too much time looking at it, you can kind of talk yourself out of things too. So I think the experienced coaching staff for Clemson might actually be benefited by this long layover because they won't overanalyze, whereas we've seen great, great job done by Ed Ogeron this year. I'm not sure anyone's done it better than him. He was the coach of the year for good reason. But I hope if in this situation for the first time, they don't overthink some of the things that got them to this point.
No, they better not think that they're better than they are. I mean, they're one of the best two teams in college football, and that's legitimate. Maybe they're the best team. But that Ohio State game, all they're hearing now is about how they beat Ohio State, those mighty Buckeyes, the unbeatable Buckeyes, and you vanquished them. When you watch that game, you can make a good case that it came down to two mistakes by Ohio State, roughing the punter and targeting on Trevor Lawrence. That really was the difference in that game. Not that Clemson went out and took it from them, but that they gave it to them. Now, I think that they need to have that mindset and mentality during this time and not, we're so great, LSU doesn't stand a chance either, because Ohio State stood a chance.
And so what is the process like here when you have this layoff? How much are you practicing? How much are you being physical? I mean, I know no one here has had a 16-day layoff, but what?
Well, for bowl games, yeah. I mean, yeah. At BYU, the Holiday Bowl got a reputation for being really exciting because BYU's passing attack after the layoff, after the final regular season game, was stale. It was stiff. And so we'd go out in the first half, fall behind, and have a mighty comeback in the second half. And I think that won't affect Clemson as much because a lot of their passing game is throw the ball up and let a big caveman receiver come down with it.
The toughest thing is the tackling. I mean, I didn't play defense, but I know that those guys on the defense side of the football, it's hard to maintain that game-ready fundamentals. So offensive line and defense, those are the two things I always look at after a really long layoff because they might not be as sharp as they were throughout the regular season.
And both of these coaches, are going to have them prepared. They have a system. They have things in place on how it's going to go. They have the timed out perfectly so they can have them peak right at the right time. Dabo Swinney, they're looking to be a 30-0 team over the last 2 years. So to your point, I don't think they're looking ahead. They've got this thing ramped up and they're going to peak hopefully at the right point for him and that staff.
Trevor, you make a good point. I mean, Clemson has been beating this underdog storyline all year. And, you know, they've been the team that's been slept on. And actually, coming up, we're going to talk about, you know, is Trevor Lawrence actually being slept on? Joe Burrow, he has a Heisman, but is the guy who last raised the biggest trophy in college football actually being slept on right now? We'll talk about that and more when College Football Live returns.
Trevor Lawrence is the best player in all of college football. Nobody even talks about it.
For the people that's sleeping on Trevor, I would say keep sleeping. Any other quarterback that faces adversity kind of folds up and doesn't come back as good. Trevor's come back better. He's a baller.
He's going to throw it out the back to the end zone. Rossbow goes up, caught it, run it down for a touchdown.
He can hit you anywhere on the field. He can run the ball. There's really nothing Trevor can't do.
Wake up, because that boy coming.
Welcome to College Football Live, presented by Mazda.
You got to think of both sides of the spectrum.
I think there's a real part of him that would like to go back to school.
Turning down millions of dollars.
He's in the safe place if he goes back to Alabama.
I think you take that leap.
Everything so far has been really good in terms of his rehab, but this is a work in progress.
He's got a medical checkup. How healthy will he be and when?
People wonder, how would you turn down an opportunity for the NFL?
This is a no-brainer.
Rest on someone's
dime. Your first contract in the NFL is the only one you're promised to ever get.
Coming down to my decision.
The tide has turned. Welcome to College Football Live. I'm Cassidy Hubbard, joined by Trevor Maddich, Greg McElroy, and Ryan Leaf. We're going three deep here because, you guys, we're a week away from the national championship game, and we're going to be looking at the quarterback matchup coming up in the show. But first, we begin the show with another quarterback and their decision about his future. Tua Tagovailoa held a press conference today, and he revealed he will forego his senior season and enter the 2020 NFL draft.
I've had a difficult time making this decision about my future, but first and foremost, I want to thank my Lord and Savior Jesus Christ for this opportunity to stand before you all with my decision. My love for the University of Alabama, our coaches, our fans, and my teammates has made this especially hard for me. I have had the advice and counsel of my parents, my family, and coaches in going through a thorough analysis of the alternatives. And without further ado, with lots of prayers, thoughts, and guidance, I have decided that I will be declaring and entering the 2020 NFL draft. My 3 years at the University of Alabama have been the epitome of a roller coaster. I've had a fair share of ups, of many ups and a handful of downs, and I couldn't be happier to know that with all the success and failures I've had here at the university, it has prepared me for life in general. I can't express how grateful I am to have attended the greatest school in college. But the biggest thing I remember with my time here are the memories that I've made with all my friends, family, and loved ones.
So Tua is third on Mel Kiper Jr.'s latest big board behind Chase Young and Joe Burrow. It's interesting to note that Tua is 12th on Todd McShay's rankings, but thinks he could go in the top five in his mock draft. For more on Tua's decision, here's Laura Rutledge.
Cassidy, it's been an emotional day here for Alabama and quarterback Tua Tagovailoa declaring officially for the NFL draft. Coach Saban saying that he considers Tua like a son, and he's not sure that there's been any player that's come through here that's made such an impact on this program, both on and off the field. Tua, of course, saying a very difficult decision that he had to make, but ultimately felt content with what he was doing. He loves this university so much, saying he's going to miss being with his teammates the most, and of course his brother, Talia, still part of this Alabama roster. One of the big updates out of today, though, had to do with Tua's health, and you saw him walking onto that podium to do this press conference, walking around here at the facility. He's doing all of this without the crutch that he had. He was in the partial weight-bearing part of his recovery and has since ditched that crutch. So he says he's feeling good. He's been throwing the football even from a seated position and is still on track to really start doing more athletic activity around that 3-month mark post-surgery. So that'd be sometime in February. Still not totally sure about the combine, pro day, all of that. But either way, trending upward for Tua and trending right on track with what they thought would be the case for this hip recovery.
Thanks, Laura. Let's go by the numbers on Tua with the Tide. He went 22-2 as a starter for Alabama, and he went on to rewrite the record book in Tuscaloosa. His 87 career touchdown passes beat A.J. McCarron's previous record by 10. He had a school record 43 TD passes in 2018. He was responsible for 96 touchdowns in his career, which was 16 more than any other Crimson Tide player in history. 83 of those touchdowns came in the last two seasons, the most in FBS. And he had a school record 10 career 300-yard passing games, including a career-high 444 yards against South Carolina this season. This year alone, he had three 400-yard passing games. So, guys, let's get into this. And, Greg, I want to start with you. Tua met with doctors on Friday, and as Laura pointed out, he was walking around, no limp, no crutch. What does his decision tell you about his health going forward here? I know you're not a doctor, but, right. You know, what does that tell you?
As a fan of Tua's, I was really happy to hear this decision today because it tells me that he got a really positive prognosis as to when he's going to be available to work out. I sat down with Tua and spent time with him and was around the program last week as they led up to the Citrus Bowl against Michigan. And all signs at that point kind of pointed towards him coming back because they weren't sure when he'd be able to work out and they weren't sure he'd be able to go through a proper evaluation period. So upon seeing the decision today, clearly he was given the green light by the doctors last Friday when he met with the hip specialists in New York. And that to me was really encouraging. Am I going to miss him in college football? Absolutely. I think we all are. But I think we're all really excited knowing that he has such a bright future ahead of him, knowing the medical diagnosis that it sounds to be very optimistic in the weeks and months to come.
Yeah, and I think going forward here, the medical evaluation is what is key. I've talked to some doctors about these kinds of things, and the surgery that he had on both of his ankles is the kind of thing that these doctors told me will not bother him going forward. And apparently what we're hearing now about this hip surgery and this hip injury is that that should heal to 100% as well. And Greg, I don't even know that he needs to work out. I think the teams that really want him won't not take him because they couldn't have him throw in shorts. I think they've seen enough on tape that if they wanted him before the hip injury, they'll take him anyway.
But Ryan, you are the number two pick. What is the perfect situation for Tua next season?
Well, the perfect situation is you go into it as healthy as possible with the least amount of judgment from the scouts. Because what's going to happen from now until the draft, it might be the most hyped type of event there is. Guys you may have never heard of. Baker Mayfield a few years ago was thought to be a third round pick. All of a sudden he's the first round pick, first pick in the NFL draft. So what he's going to have to do is, to Trevor's point here, what he's been able to do and play, that should be good enough for those who really want him. But it only takes one team.
Yeah.
It only takes one team to really fall in love with somebody, and they're willing to do whatever it takes to draft him. If they feel like he's got to sit for a year, then that's fine. If they feel like we got to get him out there and play him early, they probably won't draft him. This is something that is what we've seen in the NBA, you know, this last year, where you got guys sitting out the entire year in free agency to play the year after that. That could be Tua this season.
But then it's also, I think, the mental side. So if he's not going to throw, if he's not going to run before the draft, but he's on track, like you mentioned, Greg, that to do that, he will have interviews.
Yeah.
And he'll be up on the whiteboard. And you guys play quarterback. What does he need to show and just demonstrate to NFL teams when he's standing at that whiteboard in the pre-draft process?
Well, I think for him, he's going to do great at that. I mean, that's what he's been known for so long, his ability to study, then go out and see things on the defensive side of the football, and then be great at it. So I don't think any of that stuff's going to be a problem. It's all going to come down to really the medical side of it, because these coaches and these scouts, they're going to ask the questions about his injury problems, right? He's been hurt all three times now, two ankles and the hip in the 2 years he's been the starter, really. And that's going to be a question mark that's going to hang over his head and have to be answered at some point.
And I think the reason for coming out now, let's just look at the quarterback class. I mean, at the absolute worst, he's the second quarterback off the board. Justin Herbert is not without limitations, is not without question marks as well. We all know that certainly looks like Joe Burrow is going to be a Cincinnati Bengal with the first overall pick. It's highly likely that that comes to fruition. Next year, you look at it, it's probably going to be Trevor Lawrence that's the first quarterback off the board. So do you risk coming back, potentially being exposed to more injuries, potentially being exposed to more hits, or do you go now when you might have a clean enough bill of health to warrant a top five pick? And like you said, the perfect scenario for him,
Go somewhere. Don't be rushed in your rehab process. Get out there. Be on PUP, physically unable to participate, maybe for the first year, maybe the first half year. But there's no rush to get him on the field. And if he goes to a situation where he can learn from a veteran, Miami Dolphins with Fitzmagic and Ryan Fitzpatrick with what he was able to do down the stretch, that's an ideal scenario for him to be able to step into the starting role likely in 2021.
So there's a lot of wait and see right now with him, mostly, you know, how he's going to heal. But what we do know is that his career at Alabama is done. I'm going to ask you this, Greg. Where do you think he falls in the history of Alabama quarterbacks in that debate?
You know, the thing about evaluating players, so much of it is, okay, well, what did you do in the NFL? Because why do you think right now the two best players in Alabama history at the quarterback spot are Joe Namath and Kenny Stabler?
Mm.
That's because they're Hall of Fame quarterbacks.
No pressure here. Right? None at all.
Yeah. So, but I would argue if we're going to solely evaluate the college performance and what he meant to the Alabama Crimson Tide, I don't think there is a more important player in my lifetime that has worn the crimson and white. Now, in saying that, it's because we saw a philosophical shift by Nick Saban, who's a defensive-minded coach who wants to ball control, who wants to play defense. He said, you know what? No. We're going to change because this guy, number 13, if we give him the rock and drop him back 30 or 40 times a game, that gives us the best chance to be successful. So we actually witnessed a philosophical shift because of his skill set. And to think of what he's meant to that program from a character standpoint, from a timely throw standpoint, the national championship game as a true freshman stands out more than any. And the way he was constantly able to give those receivers a remarkable chance to be successful. I can't think of a guy that had a more positive impact on their program. And I honestly think, physically, he's one of the best that's done it ever in a Crimson Tide uniform.
Right, and it was kind of weird to see some of those plays that he would make, because normally you see quarterbacks at Alabama, and they would make a play like, okay, it's third and six, and I throw it for 7 yards. You know, we need a play, so we make the play that's there that we need. What you saw with Tua was astonishing deep throws that would hit the receiver at full extension. I mean, out there at his fingertips, just barely able to catch it on a full run so he could keep on going. And that was such a shock to the system to see him do that over and over and over again. And I just would have loved to have seen some sort of a heart rate monitor graph on Nick Saban when those balls went that deep, when he had somebody shorter, and then they ended up being caught.
You know what Greg was talking about, the iconic version of it and the philosophical change by Nick Saban, not only did it happened at halftime of the national championship.
Yeah.
It really did. He made that choice. He came in, and he wasn't everything for everybody that night, but he made the biggest plays at the biggest moments, and that's what makes him so special. And it's been really fun to watch, like you said, for the last 3 years.
And he's certainly special to Nick Saban. As Laura Rutledge said, he considers him a son. He also called Tua one of his favorite players that he's ever had. And he spoke with our Laura Rutledge shortly after Tua made his announcement.
Coach, what was your reaction when Tua told you that he was going to be declaring for the draft?
Well, you know, first of all, we're always happy for our players that have made a significant contribution here and created enough value for themselves to be considered, you know, like he has. So we're always excited about their future. I don't think you can have a player of Tua's significance in terms of not just what kind of player he is, but the kind of spirit he brings to the organization, the kind of leader that he is, the kind of person that he is. He's just fun to be around, and I think he impacts everybody around him in a very positive way. I don't think you could ever have somebody leave and not be a little disappointed, you know, and all that, but we're happy for him and his family. He certainly had a tremendous amount of adversity here that he has had to overcome, especially recently. And, you know, our university, our medical staff, and all the folks around here are going to do everything they can to continue to support him in every way that they can. But this young man has probably made as great an impact on this program as anybody that's ever played here, not just because of the kind of player he is, but the kind of person he is and the kind of spirit that he has.
Well, since Nick Saban's first NFL draft class at Alabama in 2008, the Crimson Tide have had 29 players drafted in the first round. Yet, not one of those players has been a quarterback. In fact, the only first-round QB out of Alabama in the common draft era was Richard Todd in 1976, who went 6th overall to the Jets. So, guys, what would we say is the future of the Alabama Crimson Tide? You made the joke that who's going to be really happy now that
Well, USC, the USC Trojans are going to be really happy who they play in week one next year.
As far as the quarterback position, how do you see that playing out?
Well, I think probably Greg probably has a better, idea of what that's going to look like. No matter what it looks like, it's Nick Saban. It's his recruiting model. It's what they do. They're going to be the team, and they're going to have a chip on their shoulder. That's a different kind of Nick Saban and Alabama football team. It hasn't existed in this era of the college football playoffs. So let's see how that plays out. It will be really interesting.
Yeah, I think it's going to be Mac Jones, if I were to guess. I mean, now it's easy to say that. He started four games this year, so it's easy to say, well, the guy that has the most experience is likely to get the first crack at it. But I was amazed by how he bounced back after really difficult moments. It's understandable as a young player, you're going to make some mistakes, and two pick sixes against Auburn, that's a difficult thing to do. But the way he responded to those pick sixes and the mental toughness and the physical toughness that he displayed in that game, I think won his teammates. It really did. They became Mac Jones believers. And at that point, that's when the competition, even though they're going to have one, and things can change a lot in the course of a 9-month period, but I'd be really surprised if someone, one of these young kids, Talia Tagovailoa, to his younger brother, Bryce Young, who's a very talented hotshot player coming out of California, Paul Tyson, who's Bear Bryant's great-grandson, is also a quarterback on the roster there. I think it's going to be really difficult for those guys in a spring practice and a fall practice setting to be able to gain enough ground to unseat Mac Jones as the likely incumbent starter.
But whoever starts there, I think this will help them get back to what Saban calls the Bama factor. That tough, hard-nosed smash you. And I think starting with last year, when they couldn't score in the national championship game against Clemson, when they got into the red zone, they just couldn't enforce their will at the line of scrimmage. This year they were better, but not what they want to be. And I think that now that the superstar guy with the huge arm that's throwing down the field, the Jerry Jeudy, and they still have Waddle and a bunch of guys, but I think now that that superstar, Tua, is no longer available, it kind of refocuses you in a way that the coaches can't. Because you look and see, how are we going to win? I got to help us win.
We'll see how that competition plays out. Meanwhile, we're a week away from quite a quarterback battle in the national championship game. According to many, Clemson isn't perfect. Underdogs, in fact, heading into the national championship. But their imperfect journey has led them to another quest to finish 15-0.
And we welcome you to Death Valley as the reigning national champs begin defense of that title.
You can pencil Clemson in for one of those Final Four spots now.
They want to destroy teams. That's how champions should think.
The Tigers strike again.
It's not easy to win. Again, I know that we're supposed to just destroy everybody.
2-point conversion for the lead against number one. This baby's over. Clemson will survive. I face the challenge head on.
And if you think I'm dead, I can say you're dead wrong. Wide open is Justin Ross. T. Higgins. Down the sideline. Touchdown, Clemson.
Clemson has hung a 60 spot on Virginia.
This is what happens when you win the ACC championship. You get a chance to go play for the whole thing.
Let's go!
The undefeated Buckeyes, the undefeated Tigers. Lawrence in a foot race. Touchdown, Tigers! A game-changing play. ETN reads. Touchdown, Tigers! Fields, it's intercepted, and the Tigers are not going to be dethroned tonight. They'll punch their ticket to New Orleans.
That's just who we are. It's just what we do. We finish.
You're watching College Football Live, presented by Mazda.
After dominating the playoff in his true freshman season, expectations for Trevor Lawrence were sky high. But for the first half of this season, something was missing. Too few throws were on target to his receivers, and way too many went into the hands of opposing players. In the second half of the season, Lawrence stopped pressing so much for the big play and settled for the smarter play. There was an increased focus on the intermediate range, 5 to 20 yards downfield. Lawrence's accuracy increased with these passes, and the Tigers became more prolific on offense. That meant fewer deep shots, but with a renewed confidence, Lawrence became more efficient with the long ball and began to look like the QB we saw at the end of last season. Since week 9, Lawrence has the second best total QBR in college football, barely behind a guy named Burrow. 3 months ago, people were asking, what's wrong with Trevor Lawrence? Now, with one game to go, he's exactly where we expected him to be.
Well, they say numbers never lie, and I think the biggest number you can point to is 25-0. But, Greg, what do you like most about Trevor Lawrence's game?
Yeah, he settled in. And if you watch him in the first maybe 5 or 6 games of the year, he was pressing. I mean, he was trying to win the Heisman on every single throw. And there's a significant burden that comes with being the face of college football, and he was. I mean, Sam Darnold struggled a little bit with that. Obviously, Trevor Lawrence dealt with that some, and he was constantly looking downfield when there was nothing to be seen. A simple check down would have been perfectly fine. Instead, he opted to constantly throw it down the field. And the best example was his game against Syracuse. If you watch him against Syracuse, he looked nothing like the Trevor Lawrence we've come to know and love. In that game, he was constantly only looking down the field, only looking at throws that were low percentage completions. And yes, they did make a couple plays on the football, and they had a couple nice run after catch, but he looked completely out of rhythm. Ever since that North Carolina game, it's like it woke up. And ever since then, he's been a completely different guy and has been accurate and decisive and has also used his legs, which he's done throughout the course of the season, but it's only amplified these last few weeks.
Yeah, I think he adjusted also. I mean, all offseason, defenders that would play him in September were watching what worked well for him last year. And everything he touched turned to gold last year. And so his first interception was in the opener against Georgia Tech, and it was a throw to a quick out to the right. He saw the corner start to bail to go into a deep zone, so, hey, he threw the ball to the quick out. Worked all last year,
right.
But the corner was watching that on tape all offseason. So he saw that materialize. He came off of his bail and jumped in front of the route and got a pick six. That was the first interception. But Trevor Lawrence never threw an interception quite like that over the rest of this season. They adjusted to him. He adjusted back.
What adjustments did you see him make in-game this season?
Well, in-game for him, there have been a lot. He talked about throwing the football down the field into coverage. When you got guys like T. Higgins and Justin Ross,
go get it.
And they talk about 50-50 passes.
Right.
I know for a long time he sat in those offices and those meetings and went like, those are 80-20 throws for me.
Right.
Those guys are going to make it. But it didn't happen. Some of them got picked off, the Louisville game in particular, and you're exactly right, they went the other way. I'm talking about the in-game ones, like against Ohio State. Mm-hmm. When they couldn't run the football, and something we didn't see all year long because a lot of people weren't watching him, he can run the football, right? You go hat on hat here, and you put him one-on-one with the free safety. And a lot of times people didn't think Trevor Lawrence was capable of making this play. Watch this. He gets to the free safety. It's man-to-man coverage. Everybody has their back turned. And then he gets to about the 20-yard line. I thought he was going out of bounds. And he goes, I can win this race. And away he goes for 6. And it was a huge turning point in that game. Brought it back to, what, 16-14 before half. And really gave Clemson that shot in the arm that they needed.
Yeah, but I tell you, the wide receivers against Ohio State weren't much of a factor in the game. Justin Ross was the leading wide receiver with 47 yards. Travis Etienne had 90-some as a running back. But I think in this game against LSU, if Trevor Lawrence is the leading rusher for his team like he was against Ohio State, I think it'll be a different issue.
Well, I'm excited to see the matchup between – well, it's when we always say the quarterback matchup, these two guys don't play each other. But it's really fun to see these two guys, one who won the Heisman, one who – is arguably the boy wonder of college football. And coming up, we will be talking about Joe Burrow and the fantastic season he's had. That's ahead on College Football Live.
Joe Burrow does not miss things. If you make a mistake, he sees it and he makes you pay for it.
Touchdown, Tigers! Throwing deep. Has a man! Another touchdown! Beautiful throw by Joe Burrow. Deep again.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun, but this was expected from us. You know, we've worked so hard for this moment, we just got to finish it off.
We've been in the gym.
To get to where you want to go, it seems like you have to go undefeated.
Touchdown, Tigers! Touchdown, Tigers! Lost the football, picked up by the Tigers!
Yes, that was nice.
No, a
LSU's defense comes up big.
LSU looks unstoppable. LSU scoring so many points so quickly.
There is one team in the country that has been battle tested, and that's LSU.
Who gonna stop us now?
So rivalry is highest level.
Hand to Clyde Edwards-Helaire. Stiff arms a man. Gets to the five. Breaks through. Stays upright. Into the end zone. Tigers win. Tigers win.
It's been 8 years coming.
Who gonna stop us now?
The next step is beating Georgia.
Late pressure comes. Burrow spins away. Runs back. Has a man open. Justin Jefferson. How about Joe Burrow? LSU victorious. SEC champion.
We're not done yet.
Number one LSU and fourth ranked Oklahoma. We expect a shootout today.
Another touchdown.
Beautiful throw by Joe Burrow.
Deep again, on target again. Touchdown again.
And LSU is going home to New Orleans to play for a national championship on January 13th.
What a season it's been for the LSU Tigers, but it's not quite done yet. And now we welcome in college football reporter Stefano Fusaro, who joins us from Baton Rouge. And Stefano, the Tigers are off today and tomorrow, but what does the rest of the week look like as far as their schedule is concerned?
Well, their de facto work week will begin on Wednesday. That's when they'll have their first practice here in Baton Rouge. They'll do the same on Thursday, and then Friday after practice, they'll head about an hour down I-10 to New Orleans, where they'll continue their preparation for the national title game at the now vacant New Orleans Saints facility. Now, it's really important for them. They're trying to make this schedule in a way that they can really try to remain everything as normal as possible. Coach Orgeron even said that they're not making this game bigger than life, and that's no small task. Remember, over half of this LSU roster is made up of Louisiana natives who have dreamed of this very moment, and that's playing in a national title game in New Orleans in the Superdome with a chance to bring that trophy back to LSU.
Well, thank you, Stefano. We look forward to your coverage all week as we build up to Monday's big game. All right, guys, as we said, we still have some time to wait, but we got a lot to get into. And let's talk about Joe Burrow. His greatness obviously was recognized as the Heisman Trophy winner. But, Greg, what do you like most about Burrow's game?
I love the way he moves in the pocket. And he always seems to maintain a passing posture. For instance, moving around the pocket, buying just a little extra time, and he always keeps his eyes downfield. Yeah, he can run it. He's very capable with his legs. He's done so time and time again this season where he's extended drives. But this one in particular, 3rd and 17, nobody open. I got to buy just a half second longer to allow Jefferson to work across the middle of the field for the icing on the cake touchdown against the Texas Longhorns. The way he can manipulate defenders by sliding just a yard up, a yard to his right, it's a little like Tom Brady. Tom Brady's not very mobile at all. But in the pocket, in a very short, small window, he can move to buy just a little bit more time to separate. And I think that's the biggest attribute that has come such a long way from where he was last year.
Yeah, that's the name I've made the comparison with. His ability to stand in that pocket and move within a box and find the open guy. And it's something that these guys have been watching for 20 years, right? Who's the guy they've been trying to emulate for the last 20 years? It's been the guy who's been the best at the next level, and that's Tom Brady. And now we're just getting to see one at the collegiate level, at the very top form. And it's just been fun and so entertaining to watch all year long.
Just the greatest quarterback of all time.
Yeah, no pressure, Joe.
No pressure.
Yeah. You got a Heisman, but here looms
right.
Tom Brady.
Right.
But like Tom Brady, one thing I love about Joe Burrow is that he understands what the defense is doing. And then he'll throw to a spot on time with anticipation. College quarterbacks, as you guys played the position, you know, often they'll see a guy open, confirm he's open, then they'll throw the ball over there and the guy will catch it. In the NFL, and what Burrow does is, when you see what the defense is, you will then throw the ball on time. It'll arrive at a spot, and you trust your receiver to get to that spot. And that's one of the reasons that Burrow looks like he's beating defenders by inches when that ball goes into what appear to be tight windows. But that's exactly where he would throw it, even if that defender wasn't there, because it's to that spot on time in that kind of a defensive look. And I love the way he does that at this college level.
I think the other thing, too, about Joe Burrow, and there is something unique about his personality. I mean, the guy, whether he should or shouldn't feel this way, every time he steps on the field, he thinks he's the biggest, baddest dude out there.
Oh, he does.
He knows it.
He'll headbutt his offensive lineman.
He does not care. about who's on the other side of the field. He doesn't care about Trevor Lawrence, first overall, most talented guy in the world. I don't care. I'm better than him. That's what he thinks.
Yeah.
And there is an innate belief within this team that if that guy's leading us, we have a chance. And we're going to get it done. And all 22 players that start for the LSU Tigers have been benefited by his presence and his moxie and his charisma and getting them to buy in, play hard, and say, hey, anywhere, anytime, come get it.
Right, that matters though, because in college I played with Steve Young, I played with Jim McMahon, Robbie Bosco, and these are guys that no matter what the score was, we just knew
yeah.
in the huddle that if we gave him time, we were going to win the game. There was just yeah. no doubt, and Burrow inspires that kind of confidence.
His poise is just so noticeable, and you don't get that type of poise if you don't put the work in practice and off the field. And so, Ryan, what has stood out to you about the work that he's done off the field and the relationship that he may have with Brady?
That's the thing, the relationship with him and Joe Brady and what they've been able to accomplish. Now, I have a play here from the Oklahoma game where they saw something on film because they line up in 2x2. They put the running back in the back there. They know they're going to get too high with that look. They motion him out so they go to empty. They are hoping for and they get a one-high check. And Joe Burrow immediately knows this because he doesn't even reconfirm when he goes left. They get Jefferson on a backup safety, and they give him all this room to the outside. He throws it over his outside shoulder perfectly. This is because of preparation and seeing something on film where they tried something different. And the motion right there was something that we used to do, and you know about that better than anything. If you can get them to be in one high when you have five wide, you can run four verticals. You can do a ton of things and put a lot of pressure on that safety in the middle of the field. And if you play one man free, then it's all day long, and that's exactly what happened.
Against those weapons, strike up the fights.
Yep.
Like man-to-man coverage against those guys, just get it going. Dun, dun,
especially
dun, dun.
With the backup safety on Jefferson right. in the slot. And they do a great job of taking Chase and Jefferson, right. mix those up and put them in the slot. You are asking for mismatches all day long, and that's how they win.
We've already compared him to Tom Brady, so let's just keep this.
Let's keep it going.
Keep it going, Trevor. So if LSU gets the win, will this be the best season ever for a quarterback in college football history?
You can make the case that it's the best season by a passer in the history of college football, not just because of what he's done, but because where he did it. He elevated LSU from a team with an offense that was stuck in cement. And in a single season, he made it maybe the most dynamic, exciting passing offense in all of college football on the way to the national championship game and a Heisman Trophy.
So not full quarterback, just...
Well, because there's some, you know, you go back a ways, you got running quarterbacks, you've got dual threat quarterbacks, and he can run, but I would say as a passer, I'll make that argument.
Yeah, I mean, you could argue Tim Tebow, for me, it may be one of the greatest college quarterbacks ever to play the game. That's where I look at it. So as a passer, yes, definitely. We just looked at that stat, right? No Heisman Trophy's won a college football playoff championship yet. Mm. He would do that as the first. And there's been many seasons of destiny, right? I had a season of destiny. Texas and Ocho's team had a season of destiny. You know, sometimes seasons of destiny aren't bound for ultimate greatness, you know? They still have to play a team that hasn't lost in the last 2 years. He's been special. It's going to take everything from the Clemson Tigers. But Joe Burrow, for me, has been a guy that I would have paid any admission to watch him play quarterback this
year. There have been so many great quarterback performances over the years, especially in the last decade. I feel like we're in the era of tremendous quarterback play because we all grew up watching y'all. Mm-hmm. You know, we all grew up wanting to play quarterback more so than ever before with the great ones that have come up. But to me, the best quarterback season I ever saw was Cam Newton in 2010. Just the way he completely took over games, even when we as a team were better than Cam Newton's led Auburn Tigers, didn't matter. He was the best player on the field, so they won. There is not a single guy on that roster that ever registered a catch or a rushing attempt in the NFL. Not one. Cam Newton's the only guy. He was absolutely Superman. And look, this is a great year. Jameis Winston in 2013 was remarkable. Marcus Mariota was remarkable when he won it in 2014 at the Heisman Trophy winner. Came up short in the national championship. But to me, Cam Newton in 2010 was unlike anything I've ever seen with my own two eyes.
I'm glad it's not too soon for you to talk about
that.
Yeah.
It's almost a decade now. You got to flip the page.
We've got Epsom salts back.
Yeah, we're in the
20s. I could never say that about a Husky. So I'm really, really proud of you.
Yeah. Well, you got to admit greatness. When you see greatness, well, maybe it's just a good excuse. Hey, that's why we lost, because he had that greatness.
Well, maybe also there just wasn't enough greatness at Washington. That's why I tend to look at it that way.
Wow.
That's
reasonable.
You know what? It still matters.
Wow.
Speaking of Alabama greatness, the only Heisman winner in the playoff era to win the championship was Derrick Henry. Now, coming up, speaking of the NFL, how the biggest news in the league today has major implications on the college football world. That's ahead.
Welcome back to College Football Live, presented by Mazda.
Tonight is the final bowl game before the national championship game. Quarterback Levi Lewis leads the Louisiana Raging Cajuns against Miami of Ohio. 7 p.m. Eastern on ESPN and the ESPN app. And let's take a look at our Progressive Bowl Challenge Cup standings with two games remaining in the bowl season. And the SEC has wrapped it up, an impressive 7-2 mark in games so far. No matter what happens on January 13th, the SEC earns its first Bowl Challenge Cup since 2015. Some NFL news today. The Dallas Cowboys have reportedly made a change at their head coaching position. Mike McCarthy will be the 9th head coach in history of the Cowboys, a source confirmed to ESPN. The news was first reported by Fox Sports. Cowboys interviewed just Marvin Lewis and McCarthy before making their decision. And this was a much talked about job. One that Oklahoma's Lincoln Riley and Baylor's Matt Rhule found their names involved in the rumor mill. Trevor, what do you think this means for both of their futures in the college game?
Well, I think that both schools are really happy temporarily because there are still jobs that are open. And I think both of those guys would be outstanding NFL coaches as well. And for them to possibly be where they are for another year is awesome. But the day is still young, and they can still leave.
We need to go refresh Twitter real quick. Where's Matt Rhule at right now? Because I know he interviewed for the New York Giants head coach job, and frankly, I think he's going to take it. I don't know for certain, but I know that with the background that he has, having been with the Giants in the past and knowing his personality and knowing just how successful he's been able to be at Baylor, I know there are a lot of NFL teams that are salivating for the opportunity just to visit with him. So I still think he's going to be patrolling an NFL sideline next year.
And if he wants to go, he needs to go now.
Yeah.
His defense is almost all seniors, and the iron is hot.
Yeah.
Now is the time for him to go. On my off-season tour where I drive around the country visiting coaches, I've stopped by Baylor every year that he's been there pretty much, and I've visited with him, and I tell you, he will be an outstanding NFL coach because of the way he relates to players. It's not just, you'll do it my way because I said so. It's that, but then he explains why, and he respects your response.
Well, when he sat up at the Sugar Bowl during his press conference and said that, I don't see why I wouldn't be here next year. For me, it was a bit disconcerting to hear him go out and interview, but I understand it, because even if you aren't going to take the job, you want the experience of going through these interviews, because he teaches his kids the same way. I'm a little different here. I think I'd be shocked if he doesn't stay at Baylor.
Really?
I think he's developed a relationship there 3 years. I think he wants to win that Big 12 title. I really do, and I think that's something that burns inside him, and he didn't get it done this year, and he thinks he might be able to. To your point, though, we lose a lot, but I think he wants to do that before he gets out of there.
Waco's a great place to make a life.
Quickly, what about Lincoln Riley? You all still feel like he's going to stay with Oklahoma?
I do.
This year?
Yeah, I feel like he's been to the college football playoff for 3 consecutive years. They've got whooped in the semifinal other than that Georgia game in the first year. He's done it with great quarterbacks. He needs to take it to that next step, and that's something that burns inside him as well.
But I'm sorry, go ahead, Greg.
No, I think that the beating that he took against LSU, I could see where he'd think about it because, man, we are a long way away.
Right.
It's probably what he's thinking to himself. But he's so synonymous with college football. I just couldn't imagine that leap. I just have a hard time envisioning it.
Both of those coaches, barring something unforeseen, could stay where they are, raise their kids there, have a life there. And unless they have an insatiable burn to get to the NFL, there's something to be said for making a life in a good place. If you're happy, stay happy.
When's the last time a college coach had made the jump and had been successful in the NFL?
Pete
Carroll's about the only
Pete
one that
Carroll, right?
But it took a little while.
There's a lot of examples of the opposite of that, though, where it wasn't successful, and you could even transition to other other leagues. NBA's an example where Fred Hoiberg went up there, and how'd that work out?
Right. Brad Stevens.
Brad Stevens is rare. Yeah.
Well, okay. While we wait for to see if Lincoln enroll GoPro, we no longer need to wait on Tua Tagovailoa. Coming up, more on Tua's decision to forego his senior season. We'll hear from him as he sits down with our Laura Rutledge.
College Football Live is presented by the first ever Mazda CX-30. Feel alive.
Saturday at noon Eastern on ABC and the ESPN app, we'll have the FCS championship game between 15-0 number one North Dakota State and number two James Madison at Toyota Stadium in Frisco, Texas. Big story today, Tua Tagovailoa will skip his senior year with the Tide and enter the 2020 NFL Draft. Shortly after he made his announcement today, he sat down with our Laura Rutledge.
Tua, why did you decide to declare for the NFL Draft?
Yeah, well, I got to talk with my parents. We got to get a lot of the information from coaches, you know, Coach Saban. Coach Sark had a good amount to do with this process, too. And then we got to talk with GMs, general managers, owners, you know, of teams. And then, you know, what the doctor's kind of report was on the whole thing. You know, that's why we made our decision.
How is the hip feeling?
I mean, the hip is good. The hip is good. It's good.
The timeline here is what for the hip recovery for you?
It's about 3 months from what, Dr. Rout, who did my surgery in Houston, had said. So.
And when can you start picking up a football again?
Oh, I've been having football.
And what have you been doing with it?
Just throwing it. You know, I could be sitting down throwing it. Probably like the 2 week mark, I was probably just throwing. Yeah, but not like, you know, swinging like my body, just tossing it. That's it.
And when can you really start to throw again?
I don't know. I've been standing and throwing and then sitting and throwing. But probably after the 3 month mark, when we know that the bone is healed, you know, and everything is good with the cartilage, you know. So.
All right, Trevor, do you think Tua made the right decision?
I do. He had an agonizing choice between two dreams: go back to play highest level of college football or the dream of the NFL. And going back to college football would have jeopardized the NFL dream.
I think it's the right call. As much as I'm going to be sad to see him go, I think it is the correct call. Knowing just the unknowns surrounding the rehab and the unknowns that you might run into next year if you were to take an unfortunate hit or to fall awkwardly, just having that secure financial security is huge. And I think it's going to change his life and his family's life.
It's a dream. It's our dream to play pro football. If I could go back, I would stay for that senior year because I know what I know now, and I wasn't mature enough. He's mature enough. He has faith. He has all of that. He's a great football player. I think it was a wonderful choice.
He's still going to go in the first round.
He's going to be fine. He's going to be playing football
to be the third overall pick. So good luck to Tua Tagovailoa. College Football Live returns tomorrow, 4:30 Eastern on ESPN2. Thanks.